Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Out.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street.
That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin. Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will. Or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million? What's the day? Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God.
Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
Okay, today's podcast is a mobile home. Mobile home, and I should put mobile home. Mobile homes. Put an S on that. Mobile homes daily offers. I'm changing the title right now. Making mobile home daily offers. Okay. I'll change it to that. All right. Well, one of our habits that we're developing now, as we end this year of 2021, so we'll be in good shape for 2022, is making offers. You know, it's like sowing seeds. You know, if you want to harvest, if you want to grow your own food, you know, like if a vegetable garden or a fruit garden or something like that, you need to plant the seeds. That's what making offers are. You're like planting seeds. So if you do it on a daily basis, I mean, matter of fact, if you want to earn daily income, you've got to do the work. You've got to plant the seeds. And in this case, it's making offers to purchase. So we're starting today on a consistent daily basis, just like we do. It's My House. We're going on December 24th will be 8 years for us. So, but we established 8 years ago, okay, wait a minute. For me to do this, I need to do it at least 5 days a week. So, you know, Monday through Friday, sometimes we do weekends, Saturday and Sunday. It's rare that we do 7 days a week, but we consistently do five. That's the habit that we've had for seven going on 8 years. So we're doing the same thing with making offers. In other words, the new habit that we're developing is making offers on mobile homes. Now, I've got a broad definition. I don't have a traditional definition of mobile homes. I include any type of housing that is not permanently attached to the ground as a mobile home. Most people, when you talk about mobile homes, they talk about single wides or double wides. All right, we have that. But if you have a tiny house on wheels, that's mobile. If you have chattel, because chattel means chattel housing, it means movable housing. RVs are included in that. So no matter what it is, if it's movable, it's movable. Now, and it's also considered personal property. Today, which is a Friday, we're going to, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we pick back up on Monday, typically Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we shall be in our clubhouse room. Because you go to the social network site Clubhouse and just look up Mobile Home Daily Offers. Mobile Home Daily Offers or Mobile Home Daily Habits. That's the daily habit that we're picking up. Okay. So starting today at 6 p.m., we're going to be locating, we're going to be searching for, and then once we find a property that meets our criteria, and this could be done for you on an individual basis, because we're looking at this as a daily support group, a daily support group where you're sowing seed via making offers. Okay? And for some of you, it might be just one a day. So if you make one offer a day, Monday through Friday, and you do it 4 weeks out of a month consistently, you've got 20 offers out there. And you only need, well, depending on the person, depending on your goal, if you just get one of those, you know you're going to get a property. You can either get the property and live in it, get the property and fix it up, and rent it, get the property, fix it up, rent it. Oh, not rent it, but fix it up, sell it, or wholesale it. All right, but this will be our daily support group. So that starts at 6 p.m. tonight. We're doing our very first one, our very first session, and we're probably going to spend at least about an hour. And, you know, you decide on what type of property that you're looking for. I've got the type that I'm looking for. And then we'll do searches, locate what we're looking for, and then we'll write an offer and send it to them. And we can do checks and balances on each other. All right, so that's the habit that we're taking on starting at 6 p.m. today on Clubhouse.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances.
Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time.
今天运走这部主要五金件嵌料的比较紧急的有哪一些需要我学习的？
This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
那我现在主要是负责是
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away.
3,000个，赶快送过来。好，这里没有了，已经没有了。是是。
But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock.
因为现在生产线已经停掉了，然后我大概要赶快把它送过去哈。好的。七点钟准时安排送量。对对对。
Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day.
好，谢谢谢谢。好。
When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year. But Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality.
Let's get people up.
In a factory this big with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down. Unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply. And soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-Yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiamen, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly line. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all.
The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only two daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons. To get a job, Guo must learn the ins and outs of every product line.
We're changing constantly. Last time, we were making grills. Then we changed to coffee makers, and now electric irons.
Workers on 27 production lines pump out an iron every 15 seconds, and as many as 60,000 irons a day. Production includes at least 10 separate brands for dozens of companies. With over 30 steps to assembly, iron making is intricate work, and there's no room for error. Assembly starts with a water spray unit, made up of springs, rubber, and washers. With training and practice, it snaps into the spout in seconds.
If it's not closed tight, it will leak or blow. Then it won't work properly.
Now the sprayer and spout are joined to the handle. The two parts of the water reservoir are placed in a heating machine. That melts the space between them and makes the reservoir watertight.
Welding is an important part of production. However, it will be easy as long as we follow our operational guidelines.
Next, the thermostat is attached to the base.
You need to make sure you're using the correct format before you insert the base. Using a wrong base can lead to fire. Wiring is also important. Where there is a wiring mistake, there's hidden trouble.
A plastic buffer is placed between the heating element and the handle to keep the handle and the user's hand from getting too hot. After that, the plug is welded to the back of the iron.
We're connecting the wire for the power supply. I can do about 4 to 5 pieces every minute, and 300 pieces an hour.
Once the spray and steam buttons are attached, it's testing time. First, the steam and squirting functions. Second, the iron's electrical system. Faulty units are either repaired or removed. Finally, irons that pass inspection are packed up and shipped away. The team won't cut corners or settle for second best. Today, Guo and her classmates will put classroom theory into practice and work the iron mine. For a teenager from a small town, living and working in a giant factory can be overwhelming.
My life is not as hard as it was before. I'm getting used to this place now.
Work on the iron line goes better than expected. For Guo, juggling work and school isn't that difficult. The hard part is leaving family and living far from home.
I guess it's learning how to be independent. When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Like China, Guo is adapting to a new world of high technology and tough international competition. And like China itself, she's determined to succeed.
I don't see myself working on the production line forever, doing the same job. Maybe I'm a bit arrogant or too confident about myself, but I want a better future.
For some people, a better future keeps them married to their job. Workers at Yupa are married to the company. Based in southeast China, Yupa is one of the biggest factories on the planet. Today and every day, its 17,000 workers are getting the world ready for breakfast. In the next 24 hours, it will produce 1,200 conventional coffee makers. Over the next 30 days, these assembly lines will deliver 210,000 cappuccino espresso machines. In the space of 1 year, nearly 2.5 million coffee makers will pour out of Yupa and into the kitchens of the world. At the center of all this is Young Lee.
We already have 200 or 300 styles, and we develop and add over 40 new styles every year.
Lee's mandate is crucial and broad. Tackle any problem that could slow down non-stop production.
We have to make every effort to find these problems and to solve them. We have to make sure that every process is working perfectly. Manufacturing shouldn't be delayed because of these problems.
Today, he's got a brand new kind of problem. One of Yupa's big clients has designed a new coffee maker. It's up to Lee to build a working prototype to entice the client into going ahead with mass production. Hundreds of Yupa jobs and millions of dollars in potential business are now in Lee's hands.
Making prototypes is a large portion of my job and is vitally important to the development of the company.
Lee starts by assembling the heating system for the water and steam. Then he carefully places it into the main body. Just when Lee's ready to assemble it all, there are parts missing. The supplier is just a walk away, a long walk, but Lee doesn't mind the distance. Someone special is waiting for him at the supply depot. The person helping him today is his girlfriend. These perks make Yupa more than a place of work. With a workforce of 17,000, many of them married with kids, this factory city turns office space into personal space.
是。
然后工作上面我们是有一点的话就有关系嘛。
Sometimes we work together. For example, if we need the help from the technician to solve production problems, then we meet each other afterwards.
Li Yang Li works in the parts supply department. She first came to Yuba in 2004.
We fell in love at first sight. I always think it must be God who makes her work here and wait for me. Even now, I still think the same.
Yupa management encourages these intimate connections. They believe couples that work together are more loyal to the company.
By working in the same company, we can go to work together and take care of each other. We can see each other more often. What's more, we can be with each other when we have a problem.
With the missing parts in hand, Li is ready for wiring. Making it all fit into the chamber isn't easy.
I will have to organize all the electrical wires properly to make sure the coffee maker operates safely.
But the real test will come after shipping. If the client approves of Li's model, Yupa could get a massive order. If it doesn't, hundreds of jobs are on the line.
If I make the prototype in a sloppy way, our customers will lose confidence in the quality of our products. It will be a great loss to our company.
Weeks later, Li's model is approved for mass production. And right away, he sets out to create a brand new production line. It takes a week to prepare the assembly line and train the workers to make the new coffee machine.
Making a coffee maker is not an easy job at all. It requires professional knowledge and a profound understanding of coffee culture.
When the prep is done, Factory City springs into action and works with astonishing speed. Li's prototype took half a day to make. Now line workers churn out 700 machines a day. Li's shift is done. And when work ends at Factory City, romance begins.
When we're done work, we normally go shopping together or take a walk. It gives us a sense of happiness.
The couple plan to get married at a mass wedding, paid for and organized by the company. All at once, dozens of Yupa workers will tie the knot, while thousands of co-workers look on.
If we take part in the group wedding, with the best wishes of all of our co-workers here, we know we will be getting married in the factory of the world, one dream, and that would be unforgettable.
A mass wedding is the couple's way of showing their love for each other and their passion for Yupa. Chef Xingming Li has a passion of his own, feeding the 17,000 workers that power the factory of the world. At Factory City, the day has barely begun. But Chef Xingming Li already faces his first daily deadline. Li runs one of five independent restaurants at Yupa. Competition between them is intense. Profits are razor thin, and Li needs thousands of customers every day just to survive. In his eyes, he's not just serving meals, he's fueling the workers that power the factory of the world.
If they don't eat well, or eat enough, they won't have enough energy. Then they won't perform well at Yupa.
It all starts with fresh ingredients. Beef, pork, bok choy, onions, carrots, and winter melon.
We have all fresh seasonal vegetables here. Whatever you can find from the food market, you can find here.
Everything is washed, sliced, and diced. Yupa churns out millions of kitchen appliances a year. But there are no food processors in Lee's kitchen. Nothing is automated. Everything is done by hand. By 9 a.m., Lee's staff is already racing against the clock.
We'll have to finish everything before 11 o'clock because Yupa staff restaurants all open at 11:30. We have to be there in advance.
In 2 hours, 3,000 workers will stop by for lunch. Lee expects just as many for dinner. This means his staff of 50 must serve 6,000 meals by sunset. That's 125 kilograms of oil, 50 kilograms of beef, and 300 kilograms of pork. That's more than 1 million tons of food every year. His chefs turn stock ingredients into hundreds of delicious dishes.
We can make different cuisines. Our chefs are all the best of their hometown.
They cook up dishes from Fujian, Sichuan, and Henan regions, and they'll soon add halal fare for Muslim clients.
I believe everything that we cook should taste like what your mom cooks for you at home.
Lee's obsession with food comes from growing up hungry.
My family was very poor. Although my dad was working very hard to earn money, we still didn't have much food to eat.
Now food is never in short supply, and all of Lee's clients return to work with their bellies full. Lee's passion for food has made him a perfectionist. He hunts the market for produce that's perfectly ripe and reasonably priced. In his kitchens, Lee controls the cooks, and no dish goes out without his approval.
Too bland. Some salt and chicken stock will make it taste better.
The special today is spicy Sichuan pork.
Actually, anyone can cook. The key is our chefs make their own special seasoning that you can't get from the market.
Lee insists the pork must be extremely fresh. He expects perfect timing from every cook.
Timing is what the chefs are really good at, but they may not be willing to share that information.
But now it's almost 10 a.m., and Lee's kitchen is about to hit the boiling point. With the clock ticking, the team of chefs are stir-frying and stewing to feed an army.
It might be a bit of an exaggeration to say that it's a battlefield, but it's true that we're really busy. We have to finish everything within 1 hour. Then we will deliver them.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Making Mobile Home Daily Offers. And this is a new habit that we're developing here at It's My House. The first habit is coming on. It'll be 8 years, December 24th. So the first habit we developed, and it I say for me, well, I heard it takes 21 days to form a habit. So that's when I started this podcast almost 8 years ago. I might do one or two a week, maybe one a week. And I said, you know what, in order to make this work, because basically when you start up with blog talk or something like that, you start with zero. Start with yourself. I had two friends. Hell, I hadn't met Robin yet. Two friends on the West Coast, they on my first one, the second, third show, whatever, crickets. So I said, you know, let me do Monday through Friday consistently. Before I knew it, I had 40 shows in the can. So that's a habit. You know, less than a month you can develop a habit. So our new habit, okay, which in part of it will include land development of land that we already have, but we have to also do a cash flow part, is we've got to make offers on certain inventory, and in this case, mobile homes. Now, I have a broad definition of mobile homes. My definition of mobile homes is different from your average person who deals with mobile homes and manufactured homes. However, in any event, the habit that we'll be dealing with or doing starting today at 6 p.m., okay, we'll be on Clubhouse, and then that whole thing is we're going to be certain. Now, it's individual. I'll be on there naturally. I have a certain type of property that I'm looking for. You or anybody who participates, and all this is free, you might have a certain type of property that you're looking for. That's okay. The thing is, we're using this Clubhouse platform for social media starting at 6 today, and we'll be doing it Monday through Friday, is to have a support group and sort of a checks and balances system where, okay, because you just can't say you made one offer a day or two offers a day or whatever. All right, after you do it and make the offer, then you've got to show your work. You got to show your proof that you sent in an offer. Now, fortunately, in these days and times, we can do things virtually. You know, I bought 10 acres of land virtually, discovered it online, and then sent my money by FedEx. And the document was legally notarized and recorded in Texas, and all that's legal, and they send me a tax bill every year. So that's the world we live in now. Some things you have to be there in person or have someone there in person, or, you know, old school is the mail, but now we got email and other ways that people can do transactions legally. But the thing is, like I say, it's for us, making offers daily. It's just like planting seeds. So let's see, what do we have here? We can do trending topics for the rest of the day. Because at 6, you know, anybody who's interested in the Clubhouse platform and making offers, that's where we'll be at. If you want to hit on some trending topics, what's been happening this week, the Rittenhouse case in Wisconsin, which I find that kind of interesting. So, you know what, I'm going to play this short audio because I just ran some errands. That's why I played on that long audio. I had to run an errand, grocery shopping real quick, get some food in the house for the weekend and next week. So let me eat this cookie or two. That's my brunch. And then we're going to start up with the Rittenhouse case. You know, what do you guys think about the Rittenhouse case up in Wisconsin?
This is the Rumor Report with Angela Yee. Rumor has it. On the Breakfast Club.
So listen up.
Well, according to reports, because you know it's about that time when people are submitting their numbers to Forbes, Kanye is worth more than $6 billion. I believe they have the number at $6.6 billion. Now, Bloomberg reports the collaboration between Yeezy and Gap is expected to arrive in stores later this year, and that could be valued as high as $970 million. Yeezy is currently valued at $3.2 billion to $4.7 billion. Now, I have these official numbers that were submitted, and I'm going to tell you what these assets are and the valuation of Yeezy for Adidas. Is $3.7 billion. The valuation of Gap Yeezy is $1.6 billion. The valuation of YeezySupply.com is $1.5 billion. He has $123 million in cash and stocks. $100 million in Skims investment, $68 million in buildings and improvements, $48 million worth of land, $10 million worth of artwork, $7 million worth of jewelry, $5 million in cars, $3 million in machinery and equipment, and $1.1 million worth of livestock, which includes sheep, horses, etc.
Okay.
Yeah, his ranch is amazing. Listen, LLC Twitter, do you realize why partnerships are important now? Does Kanye get to that $6 billion net worth without having receiving a royalty around 15% of Yeezy revenue from Adidas? He got equity and royalties in his Gap partnership as well. But to LLC Twitter and everyone who got their business degrees from YouTube University, this is why partnerships are important. This is how you get your company to scale fast and get the kind of capital that Kanye currently has, but keep being happy owning 100% of nothing.
So he has his evaluation at $7.16 billion. Now, despite partnering with Adidas for the Yeezy brand, Kanye does retain complete ownership and control. He signed a 10-year agreement to design and sell clothes under the Yeezy Gap label last year, although the deal does exclude footwear, and the current Yeezy partnership that he has with Adidas lasts until 2026.
Hey, man, you know, keep growing your companies to scale.
Absolutely.
You know, keep growing that capital to make all those investments. All those investments you named from the livestock and everything else, that's because he's got the capital to do it, because he's using that capital from these partnerships that he's doing. But keep being happy owning 100% of nothing.
Stop it. You know, when people talk all this, I got 100%. 100% of nothing
100%
is nothing.
100% of nothing is nothing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's also good to be diverse, too. And you see he has a wide,
very
portfolio.
But that's what it takes sometimes.
Artwork, jewelry, cars, sheep, horses, land, buildings.
Absolutely.
But that's what you can do. Mm-hmm. And you, like, as Envy was just saying, you get 15% of this over here, 20% of this over here, and you use that capital to make those investments and diversify your portfolio.
All right. Now, good news for Boosie. He is officially cancer-free. If you guys remember, he was asking his fans to pray for him when he went to his annual checkup.
Annual cancer checkup. I come every year. Y'all say a prayer for me. I already said 100 prayers. I'm still going to be cancer-free. My family, y'all
still
pray for me.
I love it.
Then a few hours later, he posted, "I'm cancer-free. Tears of joy. Thanks to everybody who said a prayer for me. God is great."
I love it. Black people building capital. Black people beating cancer. I love it. Give me one more, ye. Come on. Give us something good.
All right. Let me skip that one.
No, what was it?
DJ Drama was on Drink Champs.
Okay.
And it got a little awkward. Nori basically put out this teaser, and here is, according to Nori, it seems like he's giving some motives, I guess, into this Drake and Drama situation. Listen to this.
Drake smashed your girl.
Jesus.
Well, which other way I'm supposed to say it?
Drake had sexual relations
with a girl that was affiliated with you. All of a sudden, Meek, Philadelphia artist, winds up in Mean Street Studio, and he hears this reference of these other songs, Discrepancies. What's my man's name? He ain't been around since.
Quentin Miller.
Now, all roads led to DJ Drama at that time.
I can't wait till that full story gets told one day.
Mm-hmm. You know, we asked him about that when Drake threw in the line. Remember when he was up
here
and I was like...
When Drama said last summer I had
Drama
girl,
not right now. Yeah.
Drake's a demon. He's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but... but, yeah.
And you know they're reporting that Drake is trying to slide into those DMs for Kim Kardashian right now. Oh, well, he has a number, I'm sure, but...
He's a demon. But I can't wait till they tell that full story. But it's only four people that can tell that story fully, though. It would have to be Meek, Drake, Drama, and Quentin Miller.
You don't think Lake Sheezy and Don Cannon either?
Nah, those four in particular, specifically, would have to be the ones to tell that full story.
And listen, I got to slide this one in here, too, since you guys were talking about mixtapes and Versus is coming up this weekend. There was some random podcast.
Oh, hell no.
That,
who's that voice? Go ahead, continue.
And listen to this. Potentially, I guess DJ Drama was talking about perhaps a Versus battle.
Would you be down to do it if you got tapped?
I'm going to say this. Like, when it comes to mixtape catalog, and there's a lot of legends out here.
Yep.
Pay my respect to everybody that came before me and then came after me. Nobody wants to see me
Wow.
come to mixtape catalog. I guarantee did. They can talk all they want. Yep. Nobody's fucking with me when it comes to mixtape catalogs. If we're just talking about shit off the mixtapes,
yeah,
I will murder anybody.
Wow, that's a bull. You have no fear whatsoever. Anybody?
Man, give me all the smoke.
Some people are throwing out Clue might be a good match for you.
Man, Clue is. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Clue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Clue is like the OG. You know what I'm saying? If he's Dr. J, I'm Jordan, or if he's Jordan, I'm Kobe. But nobody wants smoke with my catalog, bro.
Man, salute to Drama for being so humble to give that to a fan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, talking so disrespectful.
To be randomly talking to a fan and just tell a fan, you know, something like that.
Drama said he was leaving the station and there was a guy outside with a recorder and he just felt bad for him.
That was my damn show. You guys just show some respect.
That was you outside with the recorder.
Oh, you know what? Drama was saying something like somebody tried to steal his name and then people were mistaking this other person Dramos for him.
Yeah. I saw Drama leave that in my comments too. He told Swiss and Tim to set up the verses. So
they can do it. Let's do it.
They should do it.
I think Clue got it.
Clue and Drama versus would be great. Straight mixtapes, though.
All right. Well, that's your rumor report.
That's mixtape albums, though.
Nope. Just the mixtape.
You can't do that.
Nope.
You can't do that.
The freestyles and the exclusive songs.
Clue still got it, but you can't do that. You got to be able to play the Rough Riders remix and all that stuff that Clue produced and Clue did, and that's on his album.
I'm sure he had that on his mixtape.
All right. We can debate later, guys.
Yes, we can.
All right.
All right, today's podcast is titled Making Mobile Home Daily Offers. But we're not going to go into detail on this podcast, but briefly, this is it. We are developing a new habit, which is going to take us approximately maybe about 21 days, but by the end of this month, I know that much. And that will be making offers. Because if you're into buying businesses, if you're into buying houses for income, you know, investment reasons, and there's a whole lot of other things, you need to make offers. Okay. And for instance, if you just make one offer and bet the ranch on that, it might not get accepted. All right. However, if you make several offers on several different pieces of property, you're bound to end up with at least one. Example, using the Steve Harvey thing, 10 by 10. Let's say you're looking for an income property that you can buy and rent out. All right. So we're suggesting go out and look at 10, bare minimum 10, ideally 100, but 10. And you make an offer on all 10 of those properties. You only need one. So, and that's just the way things work. That's why, we went through the law of averages, earlier this week. You know, and I think before I got into my first real estate transaction, back in 83, man, I don't know how many houses, condos, small apartment buildings I looked at, but started making offers I probably got rejected probably about 20 times before the first one got accepted. So the new habit that we're dealing with, that we're going to be not dealing with, but acting on, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday, we're starting the first one today on a Friday, is people that are interested in buying businesses, income property as far as real estate, housing personal property housing, which is mobile homes, chattel housing, things of that nature. We got a support group for you, and it's titled, you know, Mobile Home Daily Habit. And what we're doing is whatever type of property that you're looking at, including businesses, okay, because some people might want to buy a mobile home park. Some people might not be interested, but whatever it is that you're interested in, it's a numbers game. You don't fall in love with any one particular deal. You make offers. You know, you want a piece of land? Make offers 10 by 10. Make offers on 10 pieces of property. See what comes back. So that starts at 6 p.m. today on Clubhouse, and you can look us up on Clubhouse. But making money, not making money. Mobile home daily habits I can tell you exactly. And, of course, it's free. Let's see. Oh, man. Okay. All right. All right. Let me go to Clubhouse real quick. Okay. The name of this group? Okay. All right. The name of the group, the name of the club on Clubhouse, is Mobile Home Daily Offers. But it's not restricted to people that are interested in just mobile homes. I mean, we'll explain all that at 6. And then we'll proceed for at least an hour to search for and identify properties that we're interested in. And some of you know what, you might just, your quota might be just one a week. That's fine, but be consistent on doing it once a week. I mean, others, it might be once a day. For me, I'm doing once a day because that's just the way I'm built. I've got to do something every day, at least 5 out of the 7 days out of the week, in order for it to, it's a habit for me. I don't have to think about it. Okay, so that's at 6 o'clock today on Clubhouse. You know what, and to tell the truth, we're going to do every day until next Friday. And then, so we're doing today, we're starting the day at 6. We'll do Saturday, Sunday. It's 6 o'clock for the next 7 days. It's 6 o'clock p.m. on Clubhouse for the next 6 consecutive days. And then next weekend, okay, we won't do the weekend. Then we'll cut it back to Monday through Friday. Oh, you know what? Actually, today is the 12th. We're going to be available on Clubhouse at 6 p.m. every day of the week until December. To the first Saturday in December. All right, because I want to make sure we get our 21 days and 21 consecutive days. So, and once again, I'm doing it based on the way I'm wired. Any event, 6 o'clock, and you know, so we'll be there every day. It's a support group, so you know, just make sure you do it. And it's a checks and balances on myself as well. And this includes, because I'll be taking out ads too, because we got 4 acres in Hamilton County, Florida, that we're ready to take. We already know what type of clientele we want for that. All right, now, Rittenhouse. All I want you guys, I asked yesterday, so I'm putting it out there today. What's your take on Kyle Rittenhouse? This dude is on trial for a double homicide. Let me see. Now, one of the headlines here from Rittenhouse, in quotes, "I didn't do anything wrong. I defended myself." And that's going to be, we can do a whole podcast on that, particularly the Ahmaud Arbery trial. I want to talk about that, too, today, if you guys want to do it. Kyle Rittenhouse and Ahmaud Arbery case. Because with the Ahmaud Arbery case, now here's my question to you guys. And, you know, we can even throw Trayvon Martin in that case in there, too. This too. When is a man or a woman, when is a person who is unarmed, when are they allowed to defend themselves? Trayvon Martin, minding his own business, and we already heard the audio, you know, with Zimmerman, because Zimmerman, the dispatcher told Zimmerman, you know, do not pursue. Here was Zimmerman on a, what in the hell are you doing on a neighborhood watch with a loaded gun? It's called watch. The operative word here is watch. Neighborhood watch. You watch. If you see anything suspicious, then you call the authorities. But so Zimmerman ignored what the dispatcher said. And you know what? I wish I had the jury of the Trayvon Martin case, because I like to ask him a question. When are anybody, regardless of race, when is a person allowed to defend themselves against an armed attack? Ahmaud Arbery, jogging in his neighborhood, or through a neighborhood. I don't know if he lived in that neighborhood, but jogging through a neighborhood. Two guys run up on him in a pickup truck, armed. Was he allowed to, because the case that the defense is trying to paint is that he was up to no good. So the two of the three guys that on, you know, in his murder trial, and they thought they had a right, and one formerly worked for the police department. They thought they had a right to defend themselves and the neighborhood. But my question is, once again, did he have any rights to defend himself? Because I'm sure part of the defense with this Ahmaud Arbery is the dude that shot him, which was the son, he was trying to defend himself. Kyle Rittenhouse case. Let me see. Let's start off with. I'm trying to read something with that right now. Rittenhouse was 15 years old, and okay. Rittenhouse. Let me go to this. Oh no, no, all right, no. We don't want the origins of the name. Let's see. Well, Kenosha unrest shooting. Let's go with that. All right. On August 25th, 2020, amid the unrest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, after the police shooting of Jacob Blake, who happened to be a black man. And let's read about him. Jacob S. Blake, a 29-year-old black man, was shot and seriously injured by police after Officer Rustin Shesky in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Shesky shot Blake in the back, firing 7 times, inflicting multiple wounds when Blake opened the driver's door to his girlfriend. Okay. Kyle Rittenhouse at the time, a 17-year-old from Antioch, Illinois. So here's this dude coming to town with a can of open up a can of whip ass. Okay, shot and killed 2 men and wounded another man in an arm shot another man in arm during confrontations at 2 locations. He was armed with a semi-automatic AR-15 style rifle. And the individual wounded by Rittenhouse was armed with a handgun. Rittenhouse had said that he was there to protect the dealership from being vandalized. Now, I talked about this yesterday, mentioned it. Now, Rittenhouse said he was there in town to protect the car dealership from being vandalized. Question number one again, did he have a contract in writing? Number two, did he have a license to be an armed security guard? Number three, if you did have a license to become an armed security guard with the state of Wisconsin and whatever that the local authorities needed in Kenosha, Wisconsin, okay, I'm sure that I've seen my share of armed security guards, like most of us that listen to this podcast have. I've never seen any of them with an assault rifle, particularly for an auto dealership. So those are some questions. And let's see. He had a medical aid kit. So was he a trained, what do you call those, a paramedic? Is there any licensing requirement for a trained paramedic? All right. The wounded individual, had he been deputized by the Kenosha Police Department, KBD. The wounded individual, a trained paramedic, stated that he understood Rittenhouse was an active shooter. All right, well, anyway, long story short with this dude, Kyle Rittenhouse, who I guess is 18 years old now. And there are plenty of, the trial's on, you know, they do the live feeds of it. The Rittenhouse says he didn't do anything wrong. Broke down in court and everything. He believes that he didn't do anything wrong. And, of course, we have a jury on hand that they might go along with him. They might not. We don't know. You know, just like the Trayvon Martin thing. Some people thought one way. The jury thought another way. All right. So, but, you know, here's the scary thing to me about the Kyle Rittenhouse case. There's a whole lot of Kyle Rittenhouses all over the United States. Now, psychologically, in his own mind, you know, I guess Kyle felt he was doing his civic duty. And what he thought he was doing is helping the police and helping private business owners. I don't know him, haven't talked to him, but, you know, I'm just guessing that in his mind, he thought he was doing the right thing, and his intentions, he probably thought he was righteous in his intentions, and he went out and he was exercising what he thought was his civic duty. I'm just speculating here. I do not know Kyle Rittenhouse. But interesting case. So after we take this short little break here, I want your thoughts on the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which is actively going on right now, as well as the Ahmaud Arbery case, which is actually going on right now, because the guys Rittenhouse, before I go to the break. Kyle Rittenhouse, as he stated on the stand, it's on the record. Recorders on YouTube and all that. He thought he did nothing wrong. Now, the jury might go along with him. We don't know. They went along with Zimmerman with the Trayvon Martin case. So we don't know how it's going to turn out. But in his mind, killing two people and injuring another one, you know, because I'm paraphrasing here, it was either them or me. Okay. So my question is, the two guys that he killed, another one, he shot the dude, he's still living, but blew his bicep off. The question is, the two that he killed and the one that injured, did they have a right to defend themselves? The Ahmaud Arbery case, here's a dude jogging, minding his own business. He gets rolled up on with two guys he didn't know. And on first sight, they're both carrying. One used to work for the police. As a matter of fact, I think part of the defense with the Ahmaud Arbery case is they were making a citizen's arrest. Part of their defense. But they were armed because they wanted to defend themselves. But Ahmaud Arbery, who didn't have a gun on him, and then got to wrestling with a guy who had a shotgun, I mean, come on. We'll be back. I want you guys feedback on those two cases. We'll be right back.
because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
Okay. And hopefully we can get that. Well, we got the space for it. Anyway, so what I want to talk about with the remaining time we have for today is, once again, anybody who's interested in making into a daily habit, making offers to purchase land or buying a house to rent out, income property as we call it, just go to Clubhouse, the Clubhouse platform, and look for, or you'll have to join our club on there, which is free. And this is called Mobile Home Daily Habits, or Mobile Home Daily Offers. Type in one of those two, you'll get it. It's at 6 o'clock today, and 6 o'clock every day, until the first weekend in December. We're doing it every day, so we want that into a habit, just like we do this every day, or practically every day. We want to have that habit going also. All right, now let's go to some trending topics. You guys can bring up anything you want, but the two cases that I'm interested in that are trending is, what's your take on Kyle Rittenhouse, who is 18 years old now, He shot and killed two people when he was 17. His defense is it was self-defense. So he shot two, injured one, and the one that he injured, he blew his bicep, one of his biceps off his arms. Let's see. Here are his charges, which you can catch it on live. You know, they're doing live streaming on YouTube with it. But here are the charges. First degree intentional homicide. Attempted first degree intentional homicide. First degree reckless homicide. Now, notice that the language that they're using here. They're not using murder. There's a distinction here between murder and homicide. Legally speaking, let's see. First degree recklessly endangering safety, use of a dangerous weapon. I think he's got five charges with that alone. Possession of a dangerous weapon by a person under 18. Failure to comply with an emergency order from the state and local government. One, two, three, four. Well, hold on. Because some of these, he's got first degree recklessly endangering safety. He's been charged twice with that. And use of a dangerous weapon, he's got five charges. Just on those charges, that's seven charges. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So he's facing 12 charges. He's on trial right now for 12 charges. I very seriously doubt he's going to get off scot-free. Not out of 12 charges. Any one of those charges, he can get hung up on and do quite a bit of time. But that's just me thinking out loud. I'm not the jury. Hell, they might find him innocent on everything. If they buy his, you know, he didn't think he did anything wrong. That's his words, not mine. So, and then the Ahmaud Arbery case. We got time. We'll go through that, too. 314, your mic is open.
You read the text I just sent you.
You know, I just cut my phone off and put it on charger. I did not read it.
I'm keeping track.
I didn't even see it.
I'm keeping track of the points you be making on your show from 9:30. It's constructive criticism.
Okay. How many? Well, I know I started off with one thing, announcing.
You started off with
11,
45 minutes to the hour talking about Kyle, and you're just getting done. And you said several things have been redundant. You got to be better management of your time, young man.
You're right. Absolutely,
you ask
right.
The same question
them.
Over and over and over again as if you're talking to yourself, and the points you're making about Kyle Rittenhouse is just not true because the trial is on TV.
No, hold on, my Bianca. I read that off of Wikipedia. That's not
oh, that's
thing.
The worst thing.
To
that's the worst place to read. The trial itself is being telecast.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Rittenhouse is innocent of all those charges. That is one of the most racist trials that one can view.
Okay. Okay, you got a different slant on it. All right.
Well,
so
it is racist. First of all, The man did use self-defense. Everything on the videos was showing he was being attacked. The FBI withheld footage that was shot from a drone. You got Joe Biden calling him a white supremacist, and everybody he shot was white. You got CBS News in a report, an article, called him a murderer, and the trial is not over. He's going to sue them. He's going to win some big money off of that. He's on tape telling you why he was there. He had business to be there because he worked in Kenosha as a lifeguard and something else. His friend, an adult, bought him that rifle and stored it for him to practice. He didn't do anything wrong. The man he shot, Rosenblum, was a convicted felon, child abuser, just got out of prison, and he's there with a gun. He testified himself that he pointed his gun at Kyle first. Kyle pointed his gun at him. He lowered his gun. Kyle lowered his gun. Then apparently something else occurred, and he got shot. He's on record posting, "If I catch you alone, I'm going to kill you." All this stuff.
Do you believe that Rittenhouse will beat all 12 charges?
Yes, he was self-defense. The key witness testified against himself, and which he should have done because he's telling the truth.
All right, because they threw a lot of charges up there expecting one to stick.
And that judge is one of the best judges I've seen. He's a Democratic appointee. And he's chewing that prosecutor's a new butthole, like he should.
Yeah, I saw him in action a couple of days ago. He did.
You got George Floyd cousin on video telling the jury that we got people there in the courtroom videotaping you so we know who you are. He needs to go to jail. That's black privilege. Nothing's going to happen to him.
All right,
Kyle's bail was set at how many million dollars? Well, why come that kid in Texas that went into school and shot up, went to his car and got a gun and came back and shot three or four people, and he's only charged with assault? And you want to charge Kyle, and of course, you know, these two different venues, I always talk about that. But just to go to show, Kyle's bail is in the millions. His bail was $75,000. He comes home to a party. Kyle gets hit upside the head with a skateboard. He goes to be interrogated by the police. He starts vomiting. That's a sign that he had concussion. He shot that guy, too. He should have killed him. He did.
Kyle Rittenhouse was released on bail of $2 million.
And the other kid was released on bail of $75,000, the black kid.
I know they had raised money online for Kyle. Well, there's a bunch
of people.
They
raised money online
on
Kyle, and you had people. Like, for instance, there in Norfolk, Virginia, police department, where the chief is a black chief, Larry Boone, where the city manager, Chip Fowler, fired William Kelly of Norfolk, Virginia Police Department for donating $10 to Kyle Rittenhouse, no, maybe $25 to Kyle Rittenhouse Fund. What the heck he fired this man for? He going to get some big money out of that. That goes to show you the council culture and how crazy it is. This is a black chief. I thought black folks was complaining about how bad they treat. I told you blacks are just as racist as anybody else. You go to Facebook and you do a search on Kyle, you can't find him because that damn Zuckerberg in his council culture, trying to whip people into a certain mode of responses in his in that evil self. Facebook is deplorable. More council culture. And it goes on and on and on and on.
There's quite a bit of it on Facebook. As much as I love Facebook, well, we're living in an era of cancel culture. All right, well, let's switch gears for a moment. Ahmaud Arbery case. What's your take on that?
Well, I know just like the guy, one of the guys that Kyle killed tried to take his gun. Because if he had got Kyle's gun, what would he have done? Would he have not killed Kyle?
That wouldn't be a wild idea.
Well, why is he trying to take the gun? Why is he trying to take the gun? He didn't have the gun pointed at him. He comes up and tried to take it. So if somebody, you got a gun, somebody trying to take it, and you're not threatening them, what do you think they're going to do once they get it? So you got Arbery wrestling with this guy over that gun. So what is he going to do with the gun once he get it to the guy?
Man, never got that far. Well, first thing, what are they doing coming out armed?
Because they have had burglaries in the area. And he's on has been on tape before. And they was going to try to hold him so the police can investigate it, which they would have a simple right to do. Hey, if it was me, I'd say, okay, you call the police. I'm not guilty. You've had burglaries in that area, breaking into people's houses. When new people move into the neighborhood.
I'm sure that's going to be part of the defense's argument.
Well, it's a fact. It's not no argument. It's a fact, L.A. People saying that Kyle crossed the border. He didn't cross the border with no gun. The gun was already there. And he's got a right to care. Well, citizens, people got a right to protect their property. If the police is not doing it, and surely there's been all sorts of examples in the years preceding up to this where police have been told to stand down. All that rioting that was going on and looting, you mean to tell me you didn't lock nobody up for that? You lock them up and release them?
Right.
You made mention about Blake. Blake testified himself he had a weapon. And he goes to his truck. He didn't comply. First place, he didn't comply to the court order. He wasn't supposed to be there during that celebration for a kid or whatever. He had a restraining order. He disobeyed the restraining order. Then he shows up. I guess they have an altercation with the child's mother. Then the police tries to, they call the police. The police tried to question him, and he don't want to be questioned. They try to take him by the arm and stop him so they can question him. He don't want to be caught. Then he gets to the truck, and the police follow him over to the truck. Now, what do you think he's going to the truck for? If you're a police officer, just say you was arguing with him on the sidewalk.
Right.
And you see him headed to the truck. What is he going to the truck for?
On the surface, probably to get something to defend himself.
This is ULA arguing with Blake. And heated words is exchanged.
Right.
He looks mad. So he's going to the truck. ULA, what do you think that he's going to do when he come out of that truck? Do you stand there? Or are you running?
I'm running.
All right, then. So what do the police know that he's got in the truck? The police follows him to the truck. He takes the knife out of his belt in the front of him. It's one of them ninja-type knives. And the police officer shoot him. He's supposed to shoot him because he posed a danger. The cop's supposed to protect himself.
Now, the question I asked earlier is, when can Ahmaud Arbery or, well, when can people defend themselves?
You're supposed to defend yourself from the very moment you born. You born with that right. It's in the animal kingdom, right?
Oh, yeah, not humans, animal kingdom.
Humans learn from watching nature. That's how they learn. The first humans, when there's never been no humans before, to pass genetically down to the ones that was born, they learn from watching nature. That's how they learn. They couldn't learn from experience because when they got killed, who they gonna pass it on to? They dead. So they watch nature. They watch the defensive mechanisms that things in nature uses, from fowl, animals, mammals, insects, plants, everything.
And
the
now,
only person,
what,
the
what
only
about
thing can take that
mechanism is running. Running is a defense mechanism.
Yes, you can run. They had to run back in before they had weapons, mm-hmm. climb trees and everything else. But now you don't have to do that. You can stand your ground.
Yeah, many places you can stand your ground. And well, Zimmerman, that's what they said. He had a right to stand his ground.
Zimmerman had a right to stand his ground. Trayvon Martin was a child, a 16-year-old teenager. What did he say on the phone when he was talking to the girl? What did he describe Zimmerman as?
I didn't hear that audio.
A creepy cracker. That's racist. So that right there tells a lot. Now, what he should have done is ran home, like I taught my children. You got your?
No, I don't.
Well, those grown-ups in the process of being a parent and instructing your children, you tell them what to do under certain circumstances.
Well,
they
children. That's true. Don't talk to strangers.
When strangers, something creepy is something not creepy, but something is looking wrong with somebody following, you're supposed to run. Run to a store or run up to a house and ring the doorbell and knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get out in the street and try to stop traffic because you're small. You might get ran over. If you see a police officer, that's better.
Right.
What was that town at? I think it was in Philadelphia.
But now,
I'm not sure.
I was also taught to defend myself. In other words, don't if you're gonna hit them back. Don't
you a child, man? Look at all the kids that's missing. You think any of them tried to defend themselves? You got thousands that's missing. They're
that's
in
true.
Berkeley, right next to Ferguson. You got over 35 females missing, all of them black except for one. You think they, and these teenagers, you think they didn't try to defend themselves? How are you going to defend yourself against a grown person? You a child. We ain't talking about the kids, the elementary school age kids.
Mm-hmm.
You don't tell them to fight no daggone grown person. They supposed to run to find an adult. And hopefully the adult is responsible enough to recognize the situation, the danger. So he should have ran home. He should have ran home to where his father was at his girlfriend's house. Dispatcher is not no police officer. Dispatcher is basic and do nothing more and make recommendations. Dispatcher is nothing but in many cases, nothing but a civilian working a job. Talking on the radio. And how is the dispatcher going to give you recommendations? Suppose it's the wrong advice that gets you killed. So all those things have to be taken into consideration. It's plain as day. You still there?
Yeah, you know what, Pionk, I accidentally hit my mute button. I muted myself out. Can you hear me now?
Well, like I said, the dispatcher just gives advice. She's not no authority. You don't have to go through the same thing. The state legislators don't give a dispatcher the type of authority that they give a person who's acting in the capacity of a police officer who has the right to detain you in that state.
Now, did Zimmerman have a right to detain Trayvon Martin?
He didn't try to detain him. He was following him. He had a right to follow him and see where he was going. He's on the street.
Now, how did they end up in the fight? Because we don't know.
Because Trayvon circled back around and tried to jump him. According to GPS.
Well, if that's the case, then Zimmerman had a right to defend himself.
Absolutely, you got a right to defend yourself. And why is that child jumping on an adult anyway? In cities where them, those teenagers be doing the knockout game, you've heard of that, right?
To adults, elderly people?
I've
seen it on YouTube, you're right, and that's a vicious game.
Well, so should those elderly people have a right to defend themselves, whatever means
necessary? They should.
When I'm come up to do a knockout on me, I'm shooting them.
Well, do you remember the Bernard Goetz case several years ago out of New York?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, now, I'm on the side of Goetz. I believe Goetz had a right to defend himself. But
well, yeah, he did. If those guys was jumping on him, same thing in the Central Park. Five, look at all the cases in complaints of roving gangs jumping on and robbing people. You had a central, you had a Forest Park Five in St. Louis where you had five black males going to try to jump on this one white jogger, and he done what he had to do. It was two cases like that. The first case, it was about two of them. It was a white male and a white female, and they came up and tried to rob him. That male pulled a gun out and shot him, shot both of them. Then you had this other case with five black males and one victim. And I don't know if he shot him or not, but I think something went down. You ain't heard nothing about that, have you? But you know you hear about the Central Park because guess what? Donald Trump put out a newspaper article, ad, based on the information at the time, which he had a right to do. Anybody could have. And you know, the last trial with them, the prosecutor of New York wanted to have the third trial. He said, come on with it. But guess who? It's that damn ratchet mayor, de Blasio, said, no, go ahead and pay him. And you've seen the other things that he's been involved in, behaviors he's demonstrated. So one thing for sure, there's something wrong with that man's mind.
Well, de Blasio's on his way out as mayor.
Now, he's talking about somebody hinting about him wanting to run for president. Could you imagine? After Joe Biden, then him. Oh, my goodness.
Well, depending on how Biden does.
It ain't. Biden's done it, L.A. He's done it. You don't get no better from here. It only gets worse if there is a such thing when it comes down to him.
No, what I'm saying is this. More than likely, if Biden crashes and burns during this term, the next president more than likely will be a Republican.
Biden called Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist. Why would he use that type of language? He should be impeached on that, plus the other umpteen times he's done something that's unprofessional given the office that he supposedly holds. And I call him Brandon. So just think about these
things.
Well, I wouldn't
call
make
Kyle
these assertions.
Rittenhouse a white supremacist.
Well,
I'm
do blacks calling that. Blacks call him that.
Oh, yeah, man.
What
well,
you
I'm
looking
not going
to
go as far as calling him that. I think
what you're
was...
looking at, what you're looking at is a racist attack on a white male. And you've seen quite a bit of these. The whole thing about critical race theory is to get white children in a classroom and try to shame them. To get them
right.
to have what? Self-hate.
Guilt.
No, it's self-hate.
What are you talking about? Oh,
they
want
to make
folks?
These kids have to hate themselves. That's basically what you're doing. You're hating yourself.
Oh, well, okay.
For something you had nothing to do with.
And they had nothing to do with it. All right, let me switch to another one I didn't bring up. This is a trending topic, too. The lieutenant governor of North Carolina is a black man. And
he's a white North Carolina? Yeah, I know him. Yeah.
Yeah,
what's his
black
name?
He took a stand against – and I agree with him taking a stand on this. About somebody had posted something where children can see it, homosexual activity. Now, I'm not knocking what people do behind closed doors, but in the manner that this was presented in a public forum to school children, I had to co-sign with the lieutenant governor of North Carolina that shouldn't be allowed in the school system.
Well, you got another school district where the board is burning books in the library. And they got a gay and lesbian section.
Mm-hmm.
Then they want
to
put these books in there that's explicit on sexual activity for kids. They burning the books. They should be burned.
Right, I agree.
Then you got those of that persuasion complaining.
Yeah, you do. And a lot of them have
they want to get after
these
your
days.
Kids. If they can't
yeah.
get after the kids, it all dies out. They want the kids in several different things here. Critical race. They had a critical race theory 50 years ago. It was called the Latina critical race. They wasn't trying to throw it on other members of society. They wasn't trying to expose other races to it. It was for their own for their own purpose, reference
mm-hmm.
their own. That was it.
Well, we'll have to pick that up next week. In any event, Pianchi, thank you for chiming in and the constructive comment. And I'm going to get on out of here. It's almost 1 o'clock my time. So you have a pleasant day and weekend.
All right, I'll
as
see
well
you.
As well as everybody listening. Talk to you soon.